Om Gita Vinandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Samiratan Zena Tasmai Sri Gurve Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Dena Bhutare Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Nadati Swapanantikam Manisha Kapa Jugas Chaya Kipa Sundubhe Vicha Patitanam Papani Vivaishi Gurve Namah. Lord Brahma has prayed, my greatest possible good fortune, this is the 34th verse, would be to take any birth, whatever, in this forest of Gokul, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Which residents? Of the forest of Gokul. So take any birth whatever in this forest of Gokul, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras. Text 35. My mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. You are the embodiment of benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Vrindavan, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you? So what is Brahma doing? He's glorifying the residents of Vrindavan. And what is his mode of glorification? First he says that you... what could be a greater reward that you can give anyone other than you? And you've given, because you are the embodiment of all benedictions, anything that you might give or benedict someone with, you are the sum total of all that. You are the greatest of all benedictions. So what? My mind becomes bewildered, says Brahma, when to think that what are you going to reward to the residents of Vrindavan. What does Brahma mean by that? You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family. Well, who are the family members of Putana? Bakasura and Agasura, two brothers of Putana. So Krishna killed all three of these asuras, demons, benedicted them greatly because they were relatives of Putana. And Putana, not only she tried to kill Krishna, but she came in disguise of a devotee. Kamvada alud sharanam brajema. Uddhava says, who can be more wonderful? Ho pakiyam stanakana kalakutam jikham siyaryad adyapi svadvi lebhegitim datri uchatam tatonyam kamvada alam sharanam rajema. But who is a most merciful master than you? Who is more merciful than you? When Putana came, she was a rakshasi, a demoness. But she came in the disguise of a wet nurse and tried to feed Krishna her breast. But she had put poison on her bread, and she was actually trying to kill Krishna. But yet she came in the disguise of a nurse, and Krishna just took that little portion of bhakti that she had, even though it was fake, and rewarded her by giving himself to her, making her a datri, the wet nurse in the spiritual world. Who could be more kind than Krishna? So if you were that kind to Putana, how are you going to reciprocate with the residents of Vrindavan who have given everything to you? Their homes, their wealth, their friends, their relatives, their bodies, their children, their lives, and their hearts are dedicated to you only. Brahma says, "How are you? I'm bewildered trying to understand how you're going to reciprocate with them." So who is this glorifying? Residents of Vrindavan, and also the merciful nature of Krishna and how he deals with his devotees, especially his dearmost devotees, the residents of Vrindavan. Srila Sridhar Swami comments here. How can the success of these residents of Vrindavan be described, who by their devotion have made even you their debtor? They have put Krishna in their debt. Because indeed, Krishna says, Naparye hum. He cannot repay the gopis for the degree of love that they have. He cannot properly reciprocate with them, because he finds himself bahunishta. He has many, many, many devotees. And the gopis are all ekanishta. They are focused only on him. So he says that they have defeated him. He can't properly reciprocate with them. You have to be satisfied with the bliss that comes from the thrill of your service to me. So by their devotion, they have made even you, Krishna, their debtor, Brahma says. And Krishna may reply, but what am I incapable of giving by which I have become a debtor? This is replied to, indeed, what is there anywhere, any fruit superior to you, who are Vishvapala, the embodiment of all fruits, which you will give. Our minds, thinking about this, becomes bewildered. How? You are the topmost thing, person, gift, and you've given benediction, and you've given yourself to Putin in this way. How will you reciprocate with the residents of Vrindavan? By simply imitating the dress of the sats, the devotees, the most sinful Putana who was made to attain you. And if you are thinking, I will give this also to all of their relatives, that is replied to by the word Sakula, meaning together with Bakasura and Agasura. If you think, I will give just the same to these devotees, it is stated how such is insufficient. This is Sridhar Swami's comment. In these words, beginning yat, it says, this is insufficient, because look what Putana did. You have said in the Bhagavad Gita, yeyatam mam prapadyante. You reciprocate equally with the offerings of everyone. So how you reciprocate with the residents of Vrindavan when you reciprocated by giving yourself to Putana, who just came in the guise of a devotee? So how this is insufficient, Brahma says, because you have... for their homes and everything else are also for your sake. Sanatana Goswami will read just a small part of his comment. Becomes bewildered, because Brahma says, I become bewildered thinking, how will you reciprocate? Is meant in the sense of being unable to decide definitely. Or thinking, because of Krishna's indebtedness, he's under the control of these residents of Vrindavan. And abandoning persons like myself, he will remain here. And this is the fact. Vrindavanam prityaja padam ekam nagachati. Krishna never takes padam ekam. Means one step out of Vrindavan. Because he's purchased there by the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Thus Brahma becomes bewildered by the excess of pain, unhappiness, and so on, thinking that Krishna will never leave here and he won't see Krishna. Sakul means together with Bakasura and Agasura. By this we are to understand that the reason for the coming in contact with the Lord on the parts of these two, Baka and Aga, which is the reason for their attaining the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is their relationship with Putana. So not only did Putana gain something wonderful for her reflection of devotion. But even all her relatives did as well.
And Vishwanath
Chakravarti Thakur, his comment. Here Brahma may ask, O Lord, perhaps you do not want to clearly say if I may attain the dust of the feet of the inhabitants of Braja or not, because that's what he prayed for in the last prayer. Well then, please answer one other question that is on my mind. What reward will you give the residents of Braja? If you won't give me, you won't answer whether you'll give me the reward I want, what reward will you give them? Krishna replied, Brahma, though you know all the truths of the Vedas, can't you understand the answer? Brahma says, our minds are bewildered about this. By using the plural form of nas, our, Brahma means not only my heart is bewildered, but also the hearts of Shiva, the four Kumaras, Narada, and all the wise philosophers are bewildered. Krishna, exactly what is the state of your minds? Brahma says, although with great intelligence we searched in all times and places, our minds have become bewildered trying to think of what type of reward you could give them. There is no reward superior to you, Vishvaphala, and you have already given yourself eternally to the Vrijbasis as their son and other intimate loving relationships. If something better than you existed, then you would have given it to the people of Braja. However, no such thing exists. That is why our minds are now bewildered. Krishna, O Brahma, you are really ignorant of the truth. Knowing that the Vrijbasis would manifest such astonishing spontaneous love for me, I have in advance given myself to them as their son, friend, or lover. And they are satisfied with this. Others may be grateful for gifts that have already been given, but I am grateful for gifts that will be given in the future. And I reciprocate with these gifts even before they are given. Brahma, that is true, my Lord. You are certainly doing what is proper. But though Putana was sinful just by imitating a devotee, she and all her family attained you personally. But the inhabitants of Braja, who out of great affection gave up all attachments, such as house, wealth, friends, pleasurable objects, body and mind for you, also attained you. Putana also attained you. First you gave yourself to the degraded sinner Putana, and then you gave yourself to the Vrijbasis, who are the exalted crest jewel of all saintly persons. Since you have already given yourself to Putana, you cannot rightly give yourself again as a gift to someone else. In essence, this is highly improper. Therefore, you are now in debt to the residents of Braja. So this is really the conclusion. That the residents of Vrindavan, by the strength of their love, have forced Krishna into a position where he cannot properly reciprocate with them, and he remains in their debt. Napariyam. Therefore, you are now in debt to the residents of Braja. Brahma communicated this message by the movement of his nose, eyes, eyebrows, and neck. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, my dear Krishna, this is text 36, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. Purport. Apparently, the residents of Vrindavan, the abode of Lord Krishna, are simple householders engaged in ordinary affairs, such as herding cows, cooking, rearing children, and performing religious ceremonies. However, all these activities are intensely engaged in the loving service of Lord Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan performed all activities in pure Krishna consciousness and thus exist on the most exalted platform of liberated life. Otherwise, the same activities performed without Krishna consciousness constitute ordinary bondage to the material world. Thus, one should not misunderstand the exalted position of the residents of Vrindavan. Nor should one consider oneself highly religious simply because one performs ordinary domestic affairs very enthusiastically, but without Krishna consciousness. By focusing our passionate attachment on our family and society, we are completely deviated from the progressive path of Krishna consciousness. Conversely, if we engage our family in the loving service of the Lord, our endeavors to maintain our family become part and parcel of our progressive spiritual duties. In conclusion, by studying the extraordinary status of the residents of Vrindavan, we can see that the essential quality of their lives is pure Krishna consciousness, the rendering of loving service to the Lord without a trace of material desire or mental speculation. Such loving service to the original personality of God, it immediately creates the atmosphere of Sri Vrindavan Dham, the kingdom of God. Now, we'll read Vishwanath's comment to 36 rather. The verse again was, unless people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. Here, this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. Here, Lord Krishna may protest. The sannyasis will object that the inhabitants of Braja, who are all householders, have fallen into a network of material life bound by attachment to wife, children, and a host of other persons and things. Brahma replies, yes, that is true for most materialistic grihasthas. However, what to speak of the householders of Braja, even your ordinary devotees in other places are superior to these sannyasi critics. Attachment, hatred, and other material emotions are great thieves because they steal the great treasure of pure bliss from the soul. The rebellious souls are bound by their karma, placed in the prison cell of householder life, and tied with foot shackles to a host of illusions, so that they cannot criticize the Supreme Lord after having lost all their wealth. O Krishna, as long as people do not get the mercy of your devotees and become your followers, they remain in this position. However, when they become your devotees, they develop attachment for bhakti, an aversion to things obstructing bhakti. And then they repose all their love in you. In this way, the thieves of material attraction, hatred and love become sanctified by becoming fixed in you. And then help the devotee by giving him spiritual bliss, knowledge, and a host of advantages. In that way, the same home which was formerly a prison cell created by favorable and unfavorable karmic reactions becomes for your devotee a place filled with service to you by hearing and chanting your glories and a host of other activities meant to please you. These activities carry one to your eternal abode. Thus, when a devotee awakens his affection for you, then the bewilderment from objects such as his wife and sons becomes a cause for expressing his prema for you. How can householders like this be compared to ordinary sannyasis? My son Sanat Kumar criticizes the non-devotee sannyasis and praises the superiority of the devotee householders in Srimad Bhagavatam 4.22.40. The ocean of nescience is very difficult to cross because it is infested with many dangerous sharks. Although those who are non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean, we recommend that you simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. Although the ocean is difficult to cross, by taking shelter of his lotus feet, you will overcome all dangers. The residents of Braja have thousands of times more love for you than householders who live in other places. Though you are the Purna Brahma, you show yourself as dependent upon these Premika Bhaktas by taking the form of their son, friend, or lover to become their submissive servant. Verses and comments are so extraordinarily wonderful. Brahma continues. My dear Master, although we have nothing to do with material existence, you come to earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. Did everyone hear that? Why Krishna comes to earth? You don't have any reason to come to this world. You have nothing to do with material existence. But you imitate material life to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that just as a lamp does not seem to shine as brightly in sunlight as it does in the shade, or as a diamond does not seem as brilliant on a silver plate as it does on a plate of blue glass, the Lord's pastimes as Govinda do not seem as amazing in the transcendental abode of Vaikuntha as they do within the material realm of Maya. Lord Krishna comes to the earth and acts towards his pure devotees exactly as a devoted son, boyfriend, husband, father, friend, and so on. And within the darkness of material existence, these brilliant liberated pastimes give unlimited ecstasy to the surrendered devotees of the Lord. In his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada quotes Lord Brahma as follows: I can understand that your appearance as a small cowherd boy, a child of the cowherd men, is not at all material activity. You are so much obliged by their affection that you are here to enthuse them with more loving service by your transcendental presence. So see how Krishna is captured and controlled and acts as a puppet, practically speaking, being controlled by the residents of Vrindavan, their love. So this is certainly extreme. And remember, Brahma is speaking this knowing that Krishna is the all-powerful Lord. He has seen Krishna exhibit unlimited, unbounded power. So therefore, he's completely shocked and amazed to see how Krishna how he is acting in relationship to the residents of Vrindavan, how he's wandering around Braja without shoes with his friends, and sometimes his friends are pushing him and he's pushing his friends, and the cows are there and the cows wander away and Krishna calls the cows. So quite astounding. And Brahma indeed is astounded to see the extraordinary activities of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna creates universes. They come effortlessly out of his skin holes as he rests upon the Karana ocean, the causal ocean. Universes come from the pores of his skin. But those activities of the Lord are not wonderful like these activities of Krishna, his dealings, loving dealings with the residents of Vrindavan. These are the most extraordinary activities. There, Krishna is showing a hint of his power, and here, whatever power Krishna has is completely subjugated by the love of the residents of Vrindavan, which is more extraordinary. His unlimited power, we've been hearing, and for 9 cantos we've seen it established, Krishna's unlimited power, but here the residents of Vrindavan are completely captivating that person, controlling his unlimited power. Brahma is astounded. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will read his comment. Some think that the Purna Brahma, becoming the son of Nanda Maharaj in Braja, cannot be real or absolute, and that the devotees who accept this are an illusion. In reply to this, Brahma recites this verse: though you are always beyond the influence of material nature, You are never situated within the material world. You assume forms and relationships similar to those found in the material world, but your relationships are not false and temporary like those of material fathers and mothers. Excuse me, fathers and sons. Your forms and relationships are completely transcendental and eternally existing. Though your pastimes are eternal and transcendental, they appear similar to material activities. Why do you need to imitate material activities? You appear in the material world to further increase the bliss that your devotees taste from relishing your pastimes. And then he gives the example that Purport quotes about Krishna's pastimes. Spock or more appear. They are the same always, but they appear more brilliant in the material world than even in the spiritual world. And the comparison he gives, does anyone remember? Yes. No. A diamond? Silver plate? Or blue glass? Which one will the diamond appear most spectacular? Yes. Wonderful. So wonderful. And which is more valuable, silver or glass? Which is it? So Krishna's pastimes in the material world, in that sense, are more wonderful. They appear more sparkling. Because this is the material world, and everything in the material world is D-U-L-L, which spells, is there any scholars amongst you? Krishna. Dull. Not you, I mean. The material world is dull. See what happens as soon as the sun goes from our sight? It's dark. The sun causes the illumination. The nature of the material world is dark, dull, unconscious, jada. But Krishna, when he is here, he brings life, spiritual life. Text 38. There are those who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I'm concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they're all beyond the reach of my body, mind, and words. Srila Srila Swami. Brahma has said something similar in the second verse. Noted here. His second prayer was, my dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, which has shown such mercy to me and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your pure devotees. Although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, I cannot understand your personal form. How then could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? So here he's similarly expressing his inability. He doesn't want to talk about the unlimited power of Krishna because it's quite frightening for him. He just says, this is beyond me. I cannot understand. Sridhar Swami says, in this way, from the very beginning of these prayers, it has been stated how the Lord is naturally impossible to understand. Now Krishna is going to enter Vrindavan in the next chapter. So we have to keep all these points in mind. Whatever appears to be going on, we should understand that we cannot understand it. It is not as if it's the material world. This is completely, completely different. So from the very beginning of these prayers, it has been stated how the Lord is naturally impossible to understand. So that was in text 2. He said that as we read. On account of his possessing unlimited qualities. Some, on the other hand, may be established in the idea, we understand this. Brahman saying, some say, I know everything about Krishna. Laughing at such persons, Brahma speaks the verse beginning, Janantaha. But for my mind and so on, your opulence has not become the object. Srila Jiva Goswami comments. Thus, having shown in various ways how the Lord is impossible to understand by logic in such verses as Asyapideva Vapashu, text 2, now abandoning all these different descriptions, Brahma is summarizing simply with the idea that was expressed in the beginning of the Lord as his own object of worship in the verse beginning, Janantaha. Srila Sanatana Goswami says, we'll read just a little of his comment. While summarizing the description of the glories of the cow pasture of Sri Nanda, which constitutes the greatest praise of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is the topic under discussion, Brahma is mocking those foolish persons who falsely presume themselves to be in knowledge of these things. This is spoken in the verse beginning, Esham. The residents of Sri Braja are simply following in the footsteps of the Lord, and thus the power also of them is incomprehensible. So as Krishna is incomprehensibly powerful, Brahma is saying, so also are the residents of Vrindavan. No one can understand them. It is on the basis of this idea that this verse is to be understood. O Prabhu, O Lord of Sri Gokul, the greatness of these residents of Vrindavan cannot be appreciated by my body, words, and mind, and also cannot be appreciated by yours, meaning Krishna's. And so the implication is, those who presume to be in knowledge of this are the most ignorant and are worthy of being ridiculed. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also has his comment on 38. Here, Sri Krishna might say, O Brahma, if this is all true, then please tell me how is it that many wise philosophers are there, like you, who can brilliantly explain everything about my transcendental form, my brother devotees, my pastimes, and my transcendental service? Fearing that Sri Krishna may say this, Brahma then speaks this verse with shame, fear, and repentance. Brahma says, I am of that category. I thought I knew something. I am the greatest fool. Krishna protests, if that is so, then why have you spoken all these words? If you're such a fool, why are you taking the time and the energy and having me listen to your prayers if you're considering yourself a fool? Brahma replies, Kim Bahuktya, what is the use of all my words? Speaking too much in your presence is simply a sign of my foolishness. Krishna says, my dear Brahma, what are you trying to cheat me with your words? Brahma, although I have meditated on them, my mind has no power to understand your opulences. My eyes cannot grasp your transcendental form, and my words cannot describe you. As I said previously in verse 7, Gunatmanas te pi gunan vimatum, who can possibly count your unlimited transcendental qualities? Another meaning is, I cannot grasp the power of your mind with my senses. How then can I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? I cannot understand anything about your body or any of your words which are the Vedas. Indeed, when you are standing before me silently, I cannot speak even a word. In your presence, persons like me are totally insignificant. 39. Brahma is nearing completion. There are two more texts, two more prayers. My dear Krishna, I now humbly request permission to leave. Actually, you are the knower and seer of all things. Indeed, you are the Lord of all the universes, and yet I offer this one universe to you. Purport. In his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada has quoted Lord Brahma as follows. So he's saying, what can I do? Everything is yours, but let me offer it. I am the Lord of this universe, something like the Lord of the universe. So let me offer it to you. So that's all any soul can do in this world. Because what do we have that's ours? Even our body, our mind, our intelligence, whatever wealth we have, nothing is ours. Nothing is great, nothing is impressive for Krishna. But whatever it is we have, be we Brahma, who possess the universe, or a little Gilahari. Gilahari, kya? Gilahari. You don't know. You don't speak Hindi with a Brooklyn accent or something? Gilahari. Gilahari. Ki. What is it? You don't know still. Those little Vrindavan chipmunk, squirrel. You know the little squirrel, you know, the chipmunk in Vrindavan with the stripe on his back. With the...
No.
Chuanai. Yes, you do see. You come my room. I will show you. His little climbs a tree. Gilari. That's what they're called. Okay. Maybe Bengali is something different. So the little Gilahari carries, he does his little, to help build Rama's bridge to Lanka. He does his little part and Hanuman does his part. But everyone can just do according to their potency, power, what Krishna has given them. So Prabhupada quotes Lord Brahma as follows. My dear Lord, although you are the supreme Lord of all creation, I sometimes falsely think I am the master of this universe. I may be master of this universe, but there are innumerable universes, and there are also innumerable Brahmas who preside over these universes. But actually, you are the master of them all. As the super soul in everyone's heart, you know everything. Please, therefore, accept me as your surrendered servant. I hope that you will excuse me for disturbing you in your pastimes with your friends and calves. That's what he did. He disturbed Krishna's pastimes. Krishna was enjoying and he disturbed it. So this is what he did. This is the offense. Now, if you'll kindly allow me, I will immediately leave so you can enjoy your friends and calves without my presence. Because, in fact, Brahma didn't belong in Vrindavan because his mood was completely different from the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. So Brahma is appreciating their mood and he's realizing, I don't actually belong here, I'm a disturbance. The word savam tvam vetsi savadrik are very significant here. Lord Krishna knows everything and sees everything, and therefore Lord Brahma did not need to remain in Vrindavan to maintain his personal loving contact with the Lord. In fact, as the creator of the universe, Lord Brahma was somewhat out of place in the simple, blissful atmosphere of Vrindavan, where Lord Krishna was exhibiting his supreme opulence in herding cows, enjoying picnics, playing games, and so on. Upon seeing the intense love the residents of Vrindavan had for Lord Krishna, Brahma felt unqualified to remain there. He was not eager to give up the Lord's association, but he felt it better to return to his personal devotional service in Brahmaloka. Somewhat embarrassed and unhappy over his foolish attempt at bewildering the Lord, Brahma preferred to resume his transcendental loving service rather than trying to enjoy the Lord's presence. We'll read comment of Srila Swami's shortcoming. Throwing away his presumptuous identification as Lord of the universe and so on, Brahma speaks the verse beginning Anujanihi. You know everything, he says, your own glories and also the knowledge and power of persons like myself, because you are omniscient. But you are the Lord of the universe, and such is sufficient knowledge to have. Therefore, I offer to you the basis of my identification of mine, namely this universe, along with my body. Sanatana Goswami says, in this way, Brahma, having lost all false identification on account of the Lord's special mercy, which was due to the influence of the prayers offered, Brahma has resorted to supreme humility. And as if he has no knowledge of the Lord, he requests permission to return to his own place in the verse beginning, Anujanihi. O Krishna, O you who are intent upon revealing completely your Godhead, you yourself know all of your opulences which have been mentioned, because you are all-seeing, you are omniscient. Or Brahma asks ironically that even though you are all-seeing, do you know your own opulences? And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has answered this question in Chaitanya Charitamrita, saying, no, the Lord actually doesn't see the limits of his own opulence, because they are anandam, bhudi, vardhanam, they are always increasing. The idea is, no, you do not. You don't know your own opulences, because of the Lord's opulences are unlimited. Therefore, certainly, Brahma says, I am not qualified to praise these opulences, so therefore, please send me away. Furthermore, rejecting all false identification for the purpose of achieving your devotional service, I offer unto you everything that is mine. Krishna may say, my dear Brahma, you have just now requested any birth at all. Then why do you wish to go somewhere else? That is replied to by the words beginning, Sarvam. Brahma says, my situation is that in this body of four-headed Brahma, a demigod, I'm not qualified to remain here. Whereas your situation is that, being under the control of the pure love of these devotees of Vrindavan, you're very eager to give gratification to them in the proper way. O Krishna, O only darling of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, you understand, so why should I remain here? But for the purpose of achieving what I have prayed for, I am offering everything unto you. As stated, the implication is, as I have stated, the implication is that for me, even to identify with the act of offering, so therefore, also my act of offering is offered to you. Krishna may say, O most highly situated personality in the universe, by your function of creating, indeed you are the Lord of the universe. And why are you taking to so much humility? That is answered, you are the master of the universes, meaning that I am your servant. But don't we see that this universe, which is filled with the sons and grandsons of you, Krishna may say, the grandfather is directly under your superintendence? That is replied to by Brahma. This universe, which is yours, has been offered by you to me. So thus my position here is not one of Lord, but rather of being a superintendent. That is simply by the power that you have offered me. So this is teaching us how to see whatever it is we have. Even if we possess an entire universe, we are just doing, managing it, so to speak, on behalf of Krishna. And if we ever think we are the Lord, then we are in what? Yes. If we ever step one millimeter from the identity of thinking ourselves anything other than a servant, that is Maya. Jiva Goswami, short comment. O Krishna, O you whose qualities and personal form attract the senses of all beings, please give me your permission. Brahma is not begging for this permission to leave by his own desire, but he is feeling that he is unfitting for him to remain there. Sarva, so he doesn't want to leave, Jiva Goswami is saying, but he's feeling it's not appropriate for him to be there. Sarvam, that he has not received the order to remain here, so why should he stay? I'm not even able to give up sense gratification, as stated in the words beginning Tava. Further, it is only fitting for me to remain by the order of acting as a servant in Brahmaloka, which has been given to me by you. And Vishwanath's comment. Sri Krishna replied, "Very well," when Brahma offered the universe to him. "Perhaps you do not know the full extent of my power and opulence. Still, I do not know the full extent of your power and opulence either." Embarrassed, distraught, and incapable of answering any more, Brahma speaks this verse. "Please give me permission to leave. I am not worthy to stay here even for a moment. As I am most fallen, I should go to a suitably fallen place like Brahmaloka, my dear Krishna." Here the word Krishna means, "O Lord, please attract my mind and heart to Vrindavan." Brahma continued, "I've prayed that you make me a blade of grass in Gokul, yet you have not responded, even by so much as a glance. Therefore, what more shall I do standing here? It is better that I quickly go away, for I have become an offender by interrupting your lunch pastimes on the bank of the Jamuna. Therefore, I could not taste the nectar of even one word from your lips. Therefore, I will quickly depart and go far away. Now, please reclaim your calves and finish your pastimes with your dear friends, your joking and your laughing with them on the riverbank. Why should I recklessly repeat my request again and again?" With this intention, Brahma says in this verse, "Indeed, you know everything about my mind, body, and senses. Just because I created this universe does not mean that I am its master. You are the master, not only of this one universe, but of all universes. Therefore, I now offer to you this very small universe, which is your property to begin with. Please do with this universe whatever you wish." And then the final verse of Brahma's prayers. Sri Krishna Vishnukula Pushkara Doshadayan. My dear Sri Krishna, you bestow happiness upon the lotus-like Vishnu dynasty and expand the great ocean consisting of the earth, the demigods, the brahmanas, and the cows. You dispel the dense darkness of irreligion and oppose the demons who have appeared on this earth. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as this universe exists and as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances unto you. Purport. According to Srila Sanatana Goswami, Lord Brahma is here engaged in the ecstasy of Nama Sankirtan, glorifying various holy names of Krishna that indicate his variegated pastimes. Lord Krishna expertly suppressed the demoniac population of the earth, which became unbearable with the advent of demoniac politicians like Kamsa, Jarasandha, and Shishupal. Similarly, in modern society, there are so many so-called God-fearing people who are actually attracted to demoniac existence. Such persons become enlivened with the setting of the sun and go out in the darkness to enjoy life in restaurants, nightclubs, discotheques, hotels, and so on, which are simply meant for illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. And then there are those who openly defy God and his laws, declaring themselves atheists and demons. Both the covert and the overt enemies of the Lord constitute an unholy burden for the earth, and Lord Krishna descends to expertly remove this burden. Here Lord Brahma indirectly states that Lord Krishna should remove Brahma's own subtle atheism, which has led him to try to exert illusory power over Lord Krishna. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Brahma, in his shame, felt himself to be like a Brahma Rakshasa from Satyaloka, who had come to earth to disturb Lord Krishna and his intimate friends and calves. Brahma is lamenting that although Lord Krishna is most exalted, the Lord of all Lords, because he had appeared before Brahma in such a simple and innocent feature, decorated with a stick, a conch shell, ornaments, red clay, a peacock feather, and so on, and sporting with his cowherd boyfriends, Brahma dared to challenge him. Concerning Brahma's prayers, of which this verse is the conclusion, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur states, "May these prayers of Brahma, which take away all doubts and broadcast all the definitive conclusions of devotional service, become the expert craftsmanship of the foundation of my consciousness." Wonderful.
Lishana Prabhupada Thakur, we'll read more of his purport and we'll end here. Brahma said, "O Lord, if you don't want to speak to me because I'm an offender, then at least show me some mercy by giving me the nectar of your glance. By drinking this nectar, I'll be able to maintain my life for the rest of the kalpa." After expressing this feeling, Brahma offered his respectful obeisances to Krishna. Referring to Krishna's right eye, which is the original form of the sun, Brahma says, "As the sun, you make the lotus flower of the Vrishni dynasty bloom and fill them with joy." Then referring to Krishna's left eye, which is the original form of the moon, Brahma says, "O moon, who expands the ocean of nourishment for all the inhabitants of earth, the demigods and Swargalok and the birds and cows in Vrindavan, please mercifully expand the good fortune of me, the lowest of the demigods. With your two eyes as the sun and the moon, please dispel the blinding darkness of ignorance and mercifully destroy my impiety, which was seen in my attempt to bewilder even you with my mystic potency. Please remove it so that I will never again make such a mistake." Brahma said, "O Lord, even though you have killed many demons on the earth, such as Agasura, nevertheless you gave them residence in your own spiritual abode. I am also a demon like them. I am a Brahma Rakshasa from Satyaloka who has come to the earth to disturb you and your intimate friends in calves. Therefore, as you punish the other demons, you should also purify me with punishment. If he sees that his master is either merciful or cruel, the servant is encouraged to continue living. But if he sees that his master is indifferent and does not care at all, then his servant no longer desires to maintain his life." Then Brahma thought within his heart, "Alas, alas, thinking that it was not proper for my master Krishna, who is the most exalted Lord of all lords, to hold a stick, be decorated with gunja, mineral dyes, peacock feathers, and other simple ornaments, and enjoy pastimes with cowherd boys, I foolishly committed an offense to him and to his friends. Let me beg forgiveness from them." In the phrase, "Akalpam arkam akanakalpam arkam arhan bhagavan namaste," it means, "O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as the universe exists and as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances unto you." The word akalpa means including your gunja necklace and other ornaments. Arka means even the lowly arka tree, which bears flowers that cannot be offered to the Lord. Here Brahma says, "Everything in Braja, including your ornaments and even the lowly arka trees, are objects of my worship. O Lord, who can be merciful or merciless, who can grant me auspiciousness or trouble, I offer my respectful obeisances to you." Concluding Brahma's prayers, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur offers the following prayer, which was included in the BBT purport. "May these prayers of Lord Brahma, which remove all doubts and teach all the definitive conclusions of devotion, may forever remain impressed upon my heart." They translated it differently there, in a sweeter way.
Lord Brahma ki jai.
Brahma's prayers ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavinoda ki jai.
Questions, comments?
Nice, yes. It has its potent sweetness. But there was one part. One of the comments said, just around text 31, said, "But let everything end sweetly." So I had philosophy, and then it ends with the sugar on top. So much philosophy. Therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, his comment at the beginning said, "By the grace." Meditating, "I'm not afraid if the real devotees who relishing great bliss by collecting loads of jewels, marked my stance of selling jewels, offering a few jewels, meditating with determination solely upon the lotus feet of my guru, my heart desires to cross the ocean of Brahma's prayers. Okay, thank you very much. But there's more to the chapter, more wonders to come. Yes.
The analogy of the lamp that doesn't shine or is not shaded as much. The lamp shining on the sun. So is that in reference to the past verse?
You mean in the what Vishwanath said in the first verse?
Yeah, the analogy. Is that in reference to the Krishna's past entry within the world?
No.
No?
Oh, no, at the end? Or just what I just read now?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes. There were two analogies, so I think the first analogy is. But
I didn't. Which one? It's to the first one? Sure. Okay, I understand. I know. I remember that. But you said that the first thing he said was that the jewel.
No, the first analogy was the lamp.
Oh no, I'm sorry. In that verse, not what I just read, what Vishwanath said on the first verse.
No.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.